we take a single episode of a science fiction TV series and overanalyze it to within an inch of its life. This is the Fusion Patrol Podcast. Welcome to the discussion. Hello and welcome to another episode of Fusion Patrol. I'm Eugene.
And I'm Ben.
And tonight we are looking at Blake 7, the episode Mission to Destiny by Terry Nation.
Really?
Really, really. I point that out for a reason, but I'll get to later. The synopsis of the story. Aboard a spaceship, a tired pilot makes a log entry. Everything is normal. Someone enters from behind him and kills him and smashes the flight controls. Later, the Liberator spies the craft locked in a circular course. Jenna reckons it's a ship in trouble, so Blake decides to investigate. Blake, Avon, and Callie teleport over and search the seemingly abandoned ship. They find the crew fast asleep. The ship has been flooded with sonovapor. Callie finds the dead pilot. Blake and Avon clear the gas and revive the remaining crew. On the flight log, they find the numbers 54124, written in blood, the pilot's final message. When the crew are revived, they don't know what's happened, but crewman Dortman is missing. They search for him. A life pod is found to be missing. Dortman appears to have escaped, but if so, he didn't take the nootrope, the incredibly valuable cargo that they are carrying to their homeworld, the planet Destiny. Destiny is an agricultural world suffering from a fungal infection. The nootrope is the only thing that can save their world. Avon reports that the ship can be made operational, but the ship will be blind, and the return trip to Destiny will take too long to save the planet. Blake offers to take the nootrope, leaving Avon and Callie behind. When Avon undertakes repairs, Callie snoops. She discovers Mandrian and Sara arguing. In the storeroom, she finds Dortman's dead body. Sondheim has suspiciously followed her. Avon spins his hypothesis. The crimes are all about intending to steal the nootrope. They intended to incapacitate the ship without harming anyone, but the flight deck's ventilators were closed, leaving the pilot awake, and he had to be killed. On board the ship, Mandrian has now been killed. Sondheim appears to be the killer and is held, but he proclaims his innocence. The Liberator has been traversing a giant meteor storm, and the box containing the nootrope falls. The nootrope may have been damaged. They open it and find that it was never actually given to them. Back on board the ship, Avon decodes the pilot's final message, and the killer is revealed to be Sara. Uncovered, Sara holds them at gunpoint and escapes, locking herself on the flight deck. She's locked the ship in a spot and been sending a homing beacon. Her conspirator's ship is on the way. Avon concocts a plan to get Sara to come out of the flight deck. They stage a gun battle, leading Sara to believe her compatriots have arrived and killed everyone else. She comes out, and Avon punches her. Blake arrives, bringing teleport bracelets. Sara throws her bracelet off, remaining behind, unaware that Blake has rigged an explosive on the docking hatch. The conspirators and Sara are all killed as the ships explode. So, what'd you think of this episode?
Well, what did you think of it?
I actually really like this story, but for a couple of reasons, one of which is not exactly to do with the story itself. And I don't normally, as you know, give out spoiler warnings on Fusion Patrol because most of these shows are old enough that you should have seen them by now. But I'm going to give the spoiler warning now. This discussion might tip something off because the secret to Avon decoding the message is that it's a cryptic message. And when he decodes it, it becomes obvious. And you will never watch this episode without seeing the decoded message instead of what they wanted you to see. So
guess what?
What?
I saw the decoded message. I had never seen this episode before. I saw it right from the very beginning before they even rattled off the numbers. I saw it.
Not everyone does. So
I mean, it was
that's your warning.
Plain as day. And it just floored me because there's a beautiful line where Callie just kind of says, I know the answer's here. If only we could see it. And I'm like pulling my hair out thinking, I'm looking right at it.
I'd be interested to hear how many people saw that the first time through and read it out. But anyway,
well, I think maybe the reason is I think because the first time we actually get a look at it, it's at the right, it's positioned just right so that we could read it.
You know, the thing is that it is. Okay, so here is the spoiler. The message 54124 is actually S the 4 and is A, the 1-2 is the R, and the 4 is an A. And it's not written out as Sara. It is written, if you look at those numbers, they're not miswritten S-A-R-A. For example, the R, the two halves of the R, at least an inch apart. It's intended to fool you, but it is Sara, and you will never see anything but Sara. Well, from the time you ever, now anyone has said that, there's just no chance you won't see it.
True. But, and I think maybe the reason I caught it is because there's a moment, the very first time we see it, it's held at an angle. And the angle is just right so that the characters kind of, they kind of, I don't want to say that they run together, but the perspective is changed a little bit so that you don't see numbers so much as you do see letters. And of course, it's turned, what is technically right side up in order for it to read Sarah. So that's how I was able to just immediately pick it out.
Anyway, the reason I'm amused by this story when I saw it the first time is because of the 1957 Leslie Charteris book, Thanks to the Saint, a collection of short stories featuring everyone's favorite modern-day Robin Hood, Simon Templar, in which there's a story entitled The Unescapable Word. And you can put sick after that because that is the title, The Unescapable Word, in which a man has written out the word cop in his own blood to try to name the killer. But it turns out the man's Russian, and so cop is actually S-O-R in our language because of the different language set, and the killer's name is Soren, which I think is interesting that we have a character named Sorensen in this episode as well.
So, think Terry was actually lifting from that story?
Well, I think there's another little coincidence here that goes along with that. That 1957 book, or short story, was made into a 1965 episode of the Roger Moore series of Saint called The Inescapable Word, screenplay by Terry Nation.
Ah, the pieces all fall in
together.
Place. Yes, it all lines up. The dots do connect.
Yeah, he just saw that and he said, oh, see, the story was Russian and I'm going to translate it into LCD letters because that's the conceit of these numbers is that they're kind of squared off and supposed to look like an LCD readout handwriting instead of acrylic lettering. So, yeah, I would say that it's impossible that this story was not influenced by my favorite literary character. So I like the story for that reason alone. You can't take a Leslie Charteris story and not have a winner there.
I will say this. It was I saw it totally differently, but then of course there was something that you knew that I didn't. So naturally you're gonna take something completely different from this than what I did. I was kind of looking at it as it was a murder mystery.
Yes, and it starred Avon, and that's the important part.
It was Hercule Avon.
This was really the first time Avon's taken the lead in an episode.
And it was quite enjoyable. In fact, there's actually early on, there's a really great little bit where Villa has had to transport Blake, Callie, and Avon over to this ship. And Avon calls back and he simply asks Villa, have you fallen asleep or something? And Villa's response is, yes. And Avon says, in the most dry, sarcastic, with a hint of humor manner, he says, that's what I thought. And it was delivered in a way that only Paul Darrow could do it. And it just made me grin.
Well, the other thing I like about this is that Avon has taken the lead in this episode because Blake is off on the other half of the mission for some time. And he is fulfilling the role of the hero, but once again, he is fulfilling the role of the hero, not for heroic reasons. The challenge bothers him. The puzzle. He doesn't, you know, it's a kind of Sherlock Holmesy thing. It's really probably not a right, whether it's right or wrong. It's just, I don't like the mystery.
No.
And
that's
right. Whereas his assistant, Callie, is admirably playing Dr. Watson, kind of the person who feels and talks to people and does stuff. So it's a you know, it's a different episode of Blake 7, and I kind of enjoy it. I think they set the mood fairly well. It's got K-9 in it.
I think the name is pronounced Bulik from Warriors of the Deep. That was that was Sondheim.
Right. That's right. So
there's a nice, you know, several touches to Doctor Who, aside from the obvious. Not to mention the fact that Paul Dara wasn't Doctor Who.
This is true. Giving one of his great performances in Time Lash. Sorry. I said that in tongue-in-cheek. This also has some of their great lines, as we've talked about before in Blake 7, that they have times when they say things that are, you know, just so amusingly pithy. There's the bit at the beginning where Villa is saying, well, I don't like this. I sense danger. And he says, I can always tell danger. Sense danger, and Gan's response is, even when it's not there.
Yeah.
Which was good. Callie tries giving Avon one of those folksy aphorisms from Auron: a man who trusts can never be betrayed, only mistaken. Which is a stupid statement.
It is a
dumb phrase.
Really?
But Avon's response is just priceless. Life expectancy must be very short in your people.
Yeah.
And also when he, and I understand this is somewhat controversial, when they stage this fake gun battle to convince Sara to come out of the flight deck, and Avon grabs her and she elbows him in the gut, and you can see it's supposed to hurt, and she's actually putting up a pretty decent fight, and Avon just kind of pushes her away from her and gives her a haymaker on the chin, and hands her over to everybody and says, you better get her out of here. I really rather enjoyed that. He's going to go beating on more women here. It's some people don't like that line, but I thought it was
perfect.
It's a brilliant line because he's, you know, some people don't like it because he just hit a woman and it sounds like he wants to beat on him some more. But I think they're missing the point is that saying, no, take her away from me. So he knows, take her away from me so I won't do that again, because
I liked doing that. Well, I think it's not because she was a woman.
It's because she elbowed him in the gut.
Well, it's because it's her. It's and everything that she's done. I mean, she's killed people. She gave him an elbow in the gut. So yeah, he enjoyed hitting her back.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Plain and simple.
So yeah,
I understood it, and I thought it was priceless.
Let's see. What else do we have in this episode? That's the problem. There isn't a whole lot. It's a murder
mystery.
No,
there's really not a lot to go with this one.
You know, we get mostly just the interplay between the crew on the ship and kind of being led from one murder to the next. Now, one thing that didn't bother me first time I watched it. It didn't bother me this time, but it did make me think of something this time. And that was Blake basically murdered everyone on board the other ship at the end of this episode.
True.
I mean, they never killed anybody. They don't know that Sara's been murdering people, but he was actually going to take her off the ship and take her to justice. But he went ahead and planted a bomb on the locking and the docking mechanism so that when the other ship came up and did it, they both would blow up. We have no idea how many people were on there. They may have been relatively innocent.
Yeah.
Of the thing. And it's just kind of odd. It's like, you know, for Blake, kind of freaking ruthless. That's the sort of thing Avon would do.
Yeah. It's the sort of thing that Blake was, kind of thing that Blake might be accused of doing back in the Federation. Now that you mention it, I really didn't give it much thought.
Well, yeah, because you never meet those characters.
No.
I mean, not even a remote bit of communication. They are just a ship that happens to come up and docks. And frankly, they might have been a rescue ship. Oh, it picked up a homing beacon from a ship, and just like the Liberator, they might have flown up there and hooked up. It's not likely, but that's a pretty drastic course of action.
Unless he felt it was the only way that he could manage an escape.
Okay, so let me ask you this. Why didn't he just shoot him with a neutron blasters and blow him up? I mean, if he was hell-bent on destroying the ship, why not just destroy the ship?
I don't know. It does seem kind of strange. I mean, the reason for doing it, the method for doing it, it does kind of beg some interesting questions. I mean, what was the whole point of that? I don't know. I really don't know.
Well, good. Then we had a mystery of our own in this episode. We get to see the Liberator take on a, what was it, scale 27 asteroid?
Yeah, it sounds about right. Meteor storm? Huge, huge meteor storm.
Range 9, scale 27, something like that. It's a huge storm.
Well, I think the largest they'd ever faced was 8. Was it 8?
I think he said 8, yeah. 8 or 9. Pretty low. Single digits. Single digit storm. And they had to power through it. Now, this is the interesting thing is, you know, they put Zen to it. How big is it? If we fly through it with a force while on, will we be able to make it? And Zen kind of sort of gives a
non-answer.
Well, he starts off by saying it is within the tolerances of the ship.
Yeah.
Which to me means yes.
Yeah.
And then I forgot how Blake continued on with that. And then somehow it was just basically like, yeah, I don't know. Might make it, might not work.
Well, and then at one point, Jenna then says, in short, Zen doesn't know. And Zen comes back with a rather snarky, confirmed.
Yeah, Zen agrees. So that was, and then it doesn't make it. You know, that's the trick. They plow through this thing. They might be at the end. Oh yeah, it's another one of those great lines. Zen comes back and he says, well, I'm not going to be able to continue to keep the force wall on or the motors. So you got to pick one, turn one off. And Jenna's argument is if we turn the engines off, we'll never get out. So it has to be the force wall. Blake turns around to Villa and he says, so can you see the edge of the asteroid storm? And Villa's like, yes.
No.
No.
Maybe.
And Blake rather irritatedly goes, well, which is it? Because it's maybe.
Oh, that's so Villa.
But it's a good line. Again,
I know,
it's
you know, and
if,
I think if anybody else had said it, I would have accepted it. But the fact that it came from Villa, it was just real whiny almost.
That's the character he's supposed to be playing.
And I hate it.
You don't like Villa?
Oh, God, he just drives me mental. He's such a whiny coward. I mean, he's a brilliant lockpick. There's no question about it. He could break into anything in on any civilized planet. But his cowardice and his uncertainty is such an annoyance that I clench every time he opens his mouth.
I find him the charming rogue.
Rogue?
Yeah, he's a charming rogue. Yeah, in a sort of way. Sort of like a pet. It's kind of like a pet.
A pet?
Yeah. He's kind of like the crew's pet. I mean, they don't have anything else to be a pet, so.
All I know is that every time Villa speaks, this is what runs through my head. Drives me crazy.
Well, let's see. Were we ever previously of the knowledge that in addition to the greatest or second greatest computer criminal in the galaxy, Avon's also a dab hand at starship repair?
You know, somehow that really doesn't surprise me too much.
No.
Not entirely.
It's not so far off that it bothers me. It's just
no.
One of those kind of like, they're sort of using Avon as generic smart guy.
Yeah. I mean, I would have expected in terms of starship repair, I would have given that one more to Jenna.
Mm-hmm.
Because given her line of business, she would have had to improvise and just, you know, patch together anything at any given moment. If situations didn't quite play out the way she wanted them to, it would make more sense for it to be her, to be the general repair person. However, I think, you know, and I'm kind of guessing here, maybe when Terry was writing the story, he thought, you know, okay, well, you know, Jenna, she's the one who would be more inclined to do the repair work, but Avon, he's the one with the smarts and the personality to solve my mystery. And somehow maybe he just couldn't justify putting Jenna and Avon together on the ship. And I don't know, Callie has such a different kind of personality that he thought maybe that would work better. I mean, that may be the way that Terry was kind of playing it out as he was figuring out the story.
Another thing about Avon in this episode is Blake offers to take the Nutritope. And of course, the Nutritope is the most expensive item in the universe. And so the crew are a little bit iffy as to whether or not they should just let this stranger fly off with it. And Blake leaves Avon and Callie behind. Now, for starters, I didn't hear any argument from Avon or Callie.
You know, no, not, I really didn't hear. I didn't hear much, but I did kind of, and maybe I'm just imagining, but I kind of got this feeling that Avon was reluctant. I mean, he accepted it, but
he didn't like the part.
Didn't think it was a great idea.
He didn't like the part when Callie said, "You may think of us as hostages." Now, see, that fits Callie. She's got this kind of upbeat sort of, you know, put a positive spin on it. We're your hostages, kind of thing. And at that point, Avon, you know, turns to her and gives her a snarky comment about that. But he really doesn't argue with Blake. Not at all. Because I think he just wants to solve this damn mystery.
Yeah.
And he also does not blink for a second when, as Blake is starting to leave, he says, "Better give me your guns, too." And Avon and Callie just take their guns off and hand them to Blake and let him go off with them.
Mm. Not too much of a fight, no. Which is a little interesting because, I mean, I would have expected that from Callie.
They're on the ship with a killer.
Yeah, but from Avon, I would have expected a little bit more resistance. I mean, he would have eventually gone along with it, but he would have had something to say about it.
So, yeah, it's just a little weird. But like I said, I enjoy the fact that we have this whole episode where Avon is the hero, the protagonist, but he does it for entirely different reasons than Blake would have done it. Blake would have
kind
done it.
Blake
would have done it for good.
Oh, he would have done it for you know, very noble kind of reasons. Avon, no, ulterior motive.
Can you be a hero?
Yeah, but for his own personal reasons.
I got nothing else.
It's pretty straightforward.
It's a straightforward murder mystery, and I could see how some people might not like it. I like it just because it's a murder mystery, and it kind of reminds me of The Saint. And, you know, I think Avon did Paul Darrow did a perfectly adequate job filling in for Roger Moore here in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
The Saint in Space.
Yeah, The Saint in Space. The only thing that really, in terms of the story, that kind of bothered me a little bit was how much time is elapsing? Because when Blake leaves to deliver the nootrope, the only reason he's doing it is because he can get there in Liberator to Destiny in 4 days.
4 days.
And it would have taken them, I can't remember how long.
Oh, it was months.
Yeah, for Ortega to do it because there was a certain guidance device was rendered damaged, and it would prevent the ship from traveling at hyperlight speeds, if I remember correctly.
Right. They were blind at hyperlight speeds, so they had to travel at sublight, basically.
Right. So it had taken them a long time.
I think you said 3 months, but
I kind of want to say six. I can't remember, but all I know is that it was longer than the planet Destiny had left.
Basically, it would miss this growing season, and so they wouldn't be able to do anything about it till next year. The bottom line.
So that's why Blake agrees to take it. And you know, 4 days. Hey, you know, 4 days there, 4 days back. Boom, I'm done. Not entirely sure how much time has elapsed before Liberator reaches that asteroid belt.
Well, good point, because he says something to the effect of how long will it take to get to Destiny if we go through the asteroid field, and Zen says it's like 84 hours. And then he says, how long will it take if it goes around it? And he says several hundred, 300 and some hours.
Yeah.
And so they go through it. Now, I've always just kind of thought that when they reached the end of that meteor shower, that was 84 hours. But now that I think about it, that doesn't mean that at all. So I don't know how long the meteor shower took to go through.
And then they go through and
turn around and come back.
Well, not quite yet. But, you know, then they bring out the box to take out the nootrope. Now, that kind of implies, doesn't prove, but it does sort of imply that they've reached Planet Destiny, because you kind of think, oh, they're pulling out the nootrope. They're going to get ready to.
They're pulling out the nootrope because the box fell on the ground during the asteroid shower, and they're just checking to make sure it wasn't damaged.
Okay, I can accept that. Still, the part that kind of floors me is the return trip, because it really feels like that it took half as long for them to get back to Ortega.
Yeah. And, yes, it doesn't fit.
No, time-wise, it doesn't exactly fit. And I kept thinking, gee, well, if they really, you know, put the pedal to the metal on the way back, then why not just do that on the way out in the first place and make your trip go even faster? I mean, we know that Liberator can go really, really fast. So it just kind of, it's one of these continuity kind of things, you know, or not so much continuity, more story consistency. So that kind of bugged me a little bit.
I think we get into that in all the episodes where they split the crew into two timelines
that don't exactly track very well with each other.
Yeah.
And that's the only part that bothered me. I mean, I don't mind that we've got two separate storylines going on, but when the timelines become very disjointed and just don't line up, I mean, I don't expect timelines to perfectly line up, you know, all the way through. I mean, that's almost impossible. But I expect there to be some level of compatibility. And at some point, it was completely incompatible. And I had a very hard time reconciling the amount of time that was actually taking place on Ortega, given how much distance I am expecting Liberator to travel back.
It did kind of feel like that Avon had solved the mystery in about a day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's kind of my thought on that too.
You know, maybe he spent 2 days at that console fixing the flight systems, and they just cut that part out. So we weren't having murders every hour. Mm. So, but anyway. Well, that's all I've got on this episode.
Well, my final summation on this, I didn't think it was a bad episode. It kept me engaged very well enough, especially since this was one I had not seen before. But at the same time, I felt a little let down because we had such an amazingly strong episode last week with Seek, Locate.
Exterminate.
I mean, Destroy. My bad. I'm sorry. And that really was an enormously powerful episode with all these new elements and characters coming in. And all I could remember after watching Seek, Locate, Destroy, I couldn't wait to see where this was all going to go. And this one really is the ultimate standalone because the planet Destiny it's not in the Federation at all. They had been approached by the Federation, but they're not a part of it. That's why Ortega had no issues at all with Blake and company actually coming on board their ship to help out. I mean, this was as isolated a story as we could possibly get at this point. And it felt kind of, the story in of itself was fine. I love the mystery. I think it was great to see Avon take point on this. I enjoyed it greatly. It was perfect for him. But at the same time, looking at the overall series, knowing what has just transpired with bringing in Servalan and Travis, I was like really anxious to see where this could go. I mean, I don't want to see the series go to the well too many times, but I would have kind of liked to have seen more, you know, Blake on the run kind of thing. And really didn't quite get that. So I felt a little let down in that respect only. You know, that's because I'm comparing it to other episodes. The story in of itself was quite fine. And I liked the whole murder mystery thing. And I thought Avon's deductions on this were quite intriguing. I mean, it really is worthy of Cair Avon Poirot.
Did you mentioned it, and we didn't talk about it, but you're right. The Destiny is an unaligned world, way out, and they've been approached by the Federation. Do you think that there was anything meant to be implied, and I didn't get it myself, but maybe it's a setup for something in the future, that this fungal infection that overruns Destiny happens to occur after they've turned away the Federation a few times and made a few threats? And this could be the Federation deciding, well, let's teach them a lesson, wipe them out.
You know, and then Blake Seven, what, they become the Magnificent Seven for these people?
I think that's, yeah.
I mean, it could very well happen. It is interesting. Could be coincidence. Could not be. It's one of those things that kind of make you think.
At this stage in the game, from what we've seen, the only massacre that we know of, I mean, apart from the little ones where Blake's rebels are being killed, but the only massacre of innocent civilians so far has been Travis.
Right.
And obviously there are people in Space Command who do not appreciate his behavior. Mm-hmm. So would attempting to destroy a world to set an example for other non-aligned worlds be beyond what the Federation would do? How evil is the Federation?
That is a really good question. Hmm. Yeah, that one really bears serious thinking. And that's a good, there's a good point that you make there, especially if Travis has any kind of hand in it, or anybody like him. I mean, this idea of using a bullying tactic like this, this fungus, which was completely impeding, their farming and agriculture. Yeah, that sounds, it wouldn't surprise me to know that some factions of the Federation were actually kind of behind that.
Hmm. Well, I guess we'll just have to wait and find out if the Federation is really that evil as the series unfolds. Next time, when we're talking about Blake 7, we will be looking at episode 8 by Terry Nation called
Really?
Duel.
Hmm. Ooh, that's an interesting title. I can only imagine what that would imply.
Would have only been more imaginative if it had been Arena.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So, Ben, thank you for joining me.
Oh, my pleasure as always.
And listeners, we hope you'll join us all again next time on Fusion Patrol.
Confirmed.
Fusion Patrol is a Lone Locust production. Like us, leave us a review on iTunes. Or stop by and visit at our website, fusionpatrol.com. Find us on Facebook or Twitter, search for Fusion Patrol, or just drop us a note at feedback@fusionpatrol.com. Our music is Fight the Future by Amber Wolf.